I'd like to call to order the Planning Commission meeting of March 2nd, 2010. And Commissioner Colomarino, would you lead us in the pledge?
Please face the flag, put your hand on your heart, and say with me, pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Annette, could we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Colomarino?
Here.
Commissioner Jack?
Here.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Bentz?
Present.
And Chairperson Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Do I have a motion for approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Vice Chairperson Bentz, second by Commissioner Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Vice Chairperson Bentz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. Now is the time for public comment, and this portion of the meeting is reserved for persons wishing to address the commission on any matter that is not on the agenda this evening, but over which the commission has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. The commission may take action to direct the staff to place the matter on the agenda for future business. Do we have any public comment? Seeing none, I will close public comment. Do we have any Planning Commission business? Seeing none, I will move on to the consent calendar. Public hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. This item before us tonight is a conditional use permit. It's proposed at 6650 Portola Road. It is a request for a use permit for a 5-room bed and breakfast and also use permit for some additional accessory structures on the parcel. Staff is recommending approval. There's basically a couple things that we're recommending approval. One is the addition of a 256-square-foot accessory structure with a bathroom, also the addition of a 567-square-foot studio with a shower, and the addition of a 572-square-foot carport, the installation of heating, ventilation, and air conditioning in an existing on-site accessory structure, and then the approval of the 5-room bed and breakfast, all these subject to findings, conditions of approval, and deed restrictions. In terms of where the site's located, it is located on Portola Road. The property is outlined here. As I mentioned, it is 6650 Portola Road. The zoning is residential single family with a Z designation. That's a Z stands for the minimum lot size of 1.5 to 2.5 acre minimum lot sizes. You can see there's Portola Road, San Clemente, San Marcos, Los Galtos. So here's just a couple pictures of the site. This is the existing historic house that's on the property. That's the primary unit that would also contain 3 of the bed and breakfast rooms. This is an aerial photo of the site. The site is 2.4 acres. The main house is 2,400 square feet. It's located right here in the middle. There's a 610 square foot existing second unit that is located right back here in the trees. And then there's a 567 square foot accessory workshop that's located right here on the property line. A 1,400 square foot accessory garage, also referred to sometimes as a carriage house, that's located right here. And then there's about 1,200 square foot historic accessory barn that is located right about here. As you can see, the site does have a significant amount of tree cover, number of large oak trees, as well as some ornamental trees. It's a sloping site. It slopes up from Portola Road quite a bit, so this is basically a hilltop here, and then it drops off in the back. This is the overall site plan of the existing and proposed structure. Those structures are proposed structures that I'll talk about in the future. And then the colored, the orange and the blue colored areas are proposed parking spaces. Then there's an area up here in the front that's proposed for an entry sign. So in terms of the project, entitlements, there's basically two different pieces that really can be approved independent of one another. There's two separate resolutions for them. I'll talk about each separately. The first will be the accessory structures and the modifications to some of the city's accessory structure requirements. And then the second is the request to establish the bed and breakfast. So in terms of the accessory structures, as I mentioned, there are a number of existing accessory structures. So right now there's three accessory structures on the property. There's the workshop, the garage, and the barn. The second unit is not considered an accessory structure under our ordinance. It is a second unit, much like the first primary units. So we have a first unit, a second unit, and then everything else on the site ends up being accessory to that. So what is being proposed is that the accessory workshop that already exists, the request is to convert that into a studio, which is a residentially conditioned space, which is allowed under ordinance, with the provision to add a shower and bathroom to that building. There's the existing 1,400 square foot garage, or the carriage house. The request there is just to allow that to have conditioned space, which means that it could be in heating and cooling could be installed in that building. The 1,100 square foot accessory barn, there is no changes proposed to that. There is a request to add a new 572 square foot carport. The definition of a carport is that it's open on two sides and then can be enclosed on two other sides and have some sort of roof structure. And then the request to add a new 256 square foot accessory building that would also have an accessible bathroom facility built in it. Under the zoning ordinance, accessory structures are defined as detached structures that are accessory to the residential use, permitted for accessory storage and that sort of uses. Under our code, you are allowed up to two accessory structures. Already there's three on the site, and the request is to have a total of five. That is allowed with four is the carriage house. That's already an existing building. The request there would be to allow the heating and ventilation systems to be installed in that building. Building two, that is an existing building that is right now a workshop. The request there is to allow that to be converted into a residential studio with the shower and bathroom installed in it. That building right now crosses a property line, and the applicant owns the neighboring lot as well. So that doesn't present an exact problem today because it's a single owner, but it is conditioned that prior to the conversion that a lot line adjustment be recorded so that in the future we won't have some sort of land use ownership conflict. And then building three is the new carport shown here, proposed in this location. We've also shown a patio structure here in the center of the site. That would be open on all sides, and that doesn't actually qualify as an accessory structure. It's basically just a patio cover, but we did want to show it on the plans just so that it was understood that as long as that was open on all sides, that that was allowable. And then you have the existing barn structure right here. So in your staff report, your resolutions of approval, we have attached floor plans and elevations for these structures. All the structures will be architecturally similar to the main house with a plaster stucco siding and a mission tile roof. So we've included that in your resolutions for approval along with the elevations. We are recommending that deed restrictions be recorded against the accessory storage building, the studio, and then the carriage house to clarify that none of those can be used as a residential dwelling. You can't establish a third or fourth dwelling unit in a single family zone, so they can't be like second units, although they can be used on temporary basis for different purposes, and that's why they would be allowed to have heating, cooling, and restroom facilities. All right, moving on to the bed and breakfast. So what's being proposed in terms of the bed and breakfast is a request to establish a 5-room bed and breakfast. Bed and breakfasts are allowed in our residential zones subject to the approval of a conditional use permit by the Planning Commission. The definition of a bed and breakfast that allows second units to be rented for less than 30 days, that's called a vacation rental. So right now, this property owner sometimes rents it as a vacation rental, which is allowed throughout the community. So the definition of a vacation rental is less than 30 days. If it's over 30 days, it's just renting residential property. The difference between a vacation rental and a bed and breakfast is you can only have one vacation rental on a lot. Once you have two rooms or units that you're renting to a party or guest, that becomes the definition of a bed and breakfast. So 2 through 5, that gets you up to the bed and breakfast definition. So this is basically the site plan, use plan for the bed and breakfast. They're proposing 5 rooms. The 3 rooms would be in the main house located right here. That's described as the first phase. So the applicant intends to establish that right away. The second phase would be a single room for rent in the existing second unit. So these are 2 existing structures that could be rented for a total of 4 rooms. The 5th potential room would be in the studio, but that's right now a workshop. That would have to be converted, has to be upgraded with fire sprinklers because it's not a residential structure today. We'd have to do the lot line adjustment. So that would be the 3rd phase and potentially the 5th room. Under the building code, the exterior site for a bed and breakfast has to be handicapped accessible. So handicapped parking and a path of travel among the units is shown here with a dashed line and the 2 blue handicap spaces. The second unit in the studio would also have to have interior accessibility accommodations, although there's a provision in the ADA that the main house for bed and breakfast is exempt from accessibility requirements, so there's no requirements in the house. There's also the project's conditioned to provide a total of 5 guest spaces. So in addition to the 2 handicapped spaces, there would be 3 additional guest parking spaces located here. Within your resolution, we've included a floor plan and elevations to show the location where the rooms are permitted. So you can see the 3 rooms identified in the main house here. This is the second unit, so that would be your 4th rental room with a maximum height of 10 feet. The applicant would like to have the ability to have external illumination, which would be some sort of uplighting from the ground, provided that it doesn't provide any or doesn't create any glare down the street or off the site, that sort of thing. The applicant also is interested in having the ability to host occasional special events as part of the operation of the bed and breakfast for the guests of the bed and breakfast, and that could include an event such as a wedding or a party. The project is conditioned with that, with a clarification that any such event of that sort would have to be conducted consistent with all the city ordinances, including the noise ordinance, and in such a way not to create any nuisances or impacts to the surrounding neighborhood. Now, in addition to the special events for the bed and breakfast, the property currently is being operated to accommodate temporary events. And temporary events are something that are described in the zoning ordinance as an allowable use within this zone and most of the residential zones. So there already are events that are being held on the property under that provision of the zoning ordinance. That provision of the zoning ordinance isn't very specific in terms of what the special events are, but it does clearly allow temporary type events to occur on a property. So those events that do occur out there have been happening under the temporary event definition. In terms of just traffic, obviously the bed and breakfast, as well as some of these events, will create some additional traffic. Public Works Department's looked at that. We do believe that we have capacity on Portola Road to accommodate that. Under our circulation element, Portola Road is basically a red line road, which is a minor arterial. Currently, Portola Road operates at a level of service A, which is the highest level. So any events or traffic generated from these uses, we believe, would not be an impact on Portola Road. There is the overriding issue of neighborhood compatibility, not only for the additional accessory structures, but for the bed and breakfast operation. That's basic terms of neighborhood compatibility, is this is a large site. It has unique topography and significant tree cover, so there is room for extra events and extra buildings. They do have the ability to provide additional on-site parking for not only bed and breakfast, but maybe some of these special events. They do own the neighboring lot, and it's my understanding they can park up to 50 cars on the site as is. Portola Road, as I mentioned, is a minor arterial road, so it does have capacity for some larger, more intensive events than some local streets might. They will be required to comply with the noise ordinance and any other city ordinances for operations, regardless of the approval tonight. And any project or any activity in a residential zone cannot create a nuisance for the surrounding neighborhood. There are a number of findings that are required to approve these. We've listed those as part of your resolutions of approval. There's also a discussion in your staff report about those findings. So to summarize, staff is recommending approval. There's two resolutions before you that would need to be adopted. You can adopt both the resolutions or either one independently, depending on the commission's preference. In terms of alternatives, you may revise these projects in terms of their conditions as you see fit. You may approve one or any one of the resolutions. They are independent. You may decide to deny the applications, or you may decide that you need more information on these items and refer them back to the staff for further analysis. That will conclude staff's report, and I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Director. And we'll begin with ex parte, and to let you know, we've received communication from several members of the public. There is a 6-page letter from Mr. David Broadwater opposing the project. There's a letter from Maggie White, an email that was sent to the commission in favor of. And then the applicant has given us a package that we just received this evening of, it looks like, maybe 2 or 3 dozen letters in support of from neighbors. Those are available in the back in the binder if you'd like to look at any of those. And Annette, would you add those to the minutes, please? Thank you.
And indicated that he had talked to Director Frace, and they both felt that it was best if he was not present while we were touring the property. So Commissioner Benz and I went up there on Friday afternoon and walked the complete facility.
I was at the property this afternoon, met with Director Frace along with fellow Commissioner Colin Marino, toured the property. The applicant, Mr. O'Malley, did arrive home at that time and just showed us the interior main house and then left us with Director Frace to tour the property and discuss the project.
I met Commissioner Jack Friday afternoon, and we toured the property together. We didn't speak to anyone but ourselves. That's it.
As Chairperson Moreno said, I was at the property today with her and Director Frace, and we spent some time with Mr. O'Malley in the main house, and we talked with him for quite a period of time. Also, I spoke on the telephone with Mr. Broadwater when he called me to tell me that he had resent his emails with attachments that could be opened, and I had a brief exchange with him on the phone. In addition, I want to bring up this matter of possible recusal, which occurred to me as something that I needed to consider. I think that the public is aware of the unique status of Mr. O'Malley in our community. He's a very influential person. He's on the city council, which has the power to remove any of us on the planning commission. So I felt a need to, and I'm well acquainted with Tom O'Malley, I felt the need to consider, can I be fair in dealing with this matter? Can I address this matter without favoring him or disfavoring him? Because when you know somebody, sometimes there's a tendency maybe to bend over backwards not to give the appearance of giving them favorable treatment. And I concluded that I could do this without a problem, and that I can proceed in an impartial manner and consider this matter the way I would consider any other matter involved.
I also have known Tom O'Malley for a number of years, and for the same reasons my fellow commissioner said, I feel I can give honest and impartial analysis of this. However, I will admit that Tom and I had a brief conversation as we were coming in. I believe I said hello to him. He said hello, Chuck. So I don't think that...
No testimony there.
...prejudices me. So that's the extent of my expertise.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right. Right now, we're going to... If the Commission has any specific questions of staff, let's go there to start with. Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes. Director Frase, do you know how many bed and breakfasts that we have within our community, and how many of those are within the residential zone?
I don't have a count of how many that are actually permitted at this point. We'd have to research that.
Do you know if, best of your recollection, of those that we have there been any complaints or any problems with associated with them?
I have not received or been aware of any complaints in the last couple of years regarding any operations of bed and breakfasts within the city.
Okay. Since this particular application is within the residential zone, is there a requirement that the owner of the property or the owner of the business, the operation, has to reside on the parcel?
Yeah, that's one of the recommended conditions of approval, is that the operator, the innkeeper, must be on site whenever any of the rooms are being rented.
Has there been a discussion at all? When I look at the floor plans of the units, there's three bedrooms in the primary house. There's the two extra rooms. When I add that up, that comes to five. So what happens when all five units are occupied?
Well, actually, only four would ever be occupied by guests, because the innkeeper or the applicant would be required to be in one of those five rooms whenever it's being rented. They do want the flexibility that sometimes they'll rent out the main house and then they may occupy one of the other two units, so that they are consistent with that condition.
There is a discussion that you went over with respect to the special events. And on page 14 of the presentation that you made, it says the applicant expects to hold occasionally special package for the bed and breakfast use itself. Specific requirements for why or what type of events. And also, the kind of caught my eye was on one of the exhibits on page 15. It says bed and breakfast site plan. And it has building S7, which is the carriage house, outside of the envelope that's drawn for that site plan. And again, being that the events is consistent with the customary operation, why is S7 not included within that envelope?
Okay, in terms of the conditioning on the special events, I believe on page 39, condition number 6, does address special events in association with the bed and breakfast, and it's in the research and information that staff received from the applicant, we are aware of other bed and breakfasts that host events, not only locally, but you know, it seems like that is something that you find with bed and breakfasts in other areas as well. In terms of why Structure 7, which is the carriage house, isn't included within the bed and breakfast zone, that really has to do with the accessibility requirements. The bed and breakfast does have to meet certain accessibility requirements, so that line was there basically to establish the accessible areas of the site. The carriage house and the special events won't fall under the ADA requirements for the bed and breakfast. We didn't want to include it there because of just the trying to figure out how we would apply the accessibility, which is beyond what they're requesting at this point.
You have talked about the adjacent parcel being somewhat integral, very minor, with events that have occurred on the property and also with potential use with the bed and breakfast in the future. Is there, being that it's a separate parcel, is there any special permitting or special privileges that have to be granted for the additional parcel, the adjacent parcel, for to be used as such?
I don't believe it's a requirement. I think that is something that may allow the operator to conduct some of these larger events because he can provide the parking. If for whatever reason in the future he couldn't provide the parking because he didn't own the lot, then that would force him to find additional parking accommodations or scale down his events. Clearly, parking on Portola Road isn't an option. There isn't any space for parking on street, and the applicant's well aware that use of existing structures. Categorical exemptions have no time limit. Had it been a neg deck or an EIR, then there would have been statutory requirements for public review, but a categorical exemption does not have a time review period.
How is that categorical exemption being used for a determination for the bed and breakfast use? Where's the link between adding accessory structures or changing the use? How are we tying that to the bed and breakfast?
Well, the bed and breakfast is basically reuse of existing structure, which is one of the allowable exemptions under the Class 3 categorical exemption. Also, the establishment of minor accessory structures also falls under the Class 3 exemption.
There's discussion about a lot line adjustment involved in the conditions. Does the parcel that the bed and breakfast is on, is that a flag lot?
I think here's the connection to Portola Road, which I believe is probably close to 100 feet. So I think based on just the width of this, that it wouldn't technically qualify as a flag lot.
In the zoning ordinance, there are performance standards for RSFZ land use categories. Has there been any analysis done as to whether the lot line adjustment that might be needed to be applied for, will those performance standards allow for the lot line adjustment to occur? Distance from downtown, you know, those things that are in there.
Yeah, both the lots are about 2.5 acres, so we wouldn't have a problem. And if there was a size issue that we ran into here, we could always adjust back the lot line here to maintain an equal exchange of areas. Although there is an exception in the zoning ordinance for lot line adjustments to correct what are called historic use issues, where a building crosses a property line, we can make a lot smaller than what's normally allowed to correct something like that. So there's a couple remedies to deal with the lot size and the lot line adjustment. So we don't see a problem with that. That would be a ministerial approval that staff could do based on the criteria that's available in the zoning ordinance.
Why hasn't building S7 being addressed with a lot line adjustment?
Property line somewhere else. So I think this is an area where it's not really clear exactly where the property line is, but the permit of record on the carriage house shows it 8 feet from the property line. So it's somewhere between that and something else, maybe.
If for whatever reasons, when I looked at the performance standards for the zoning in the zoning ordinance, It ranges, what, from 1.5 to 2.5 acres. You noted, it's noted in the staff report that this is a 2.4-acre parcel. And so that's where kind of my questions about the performance standards would come into effect. If, for whatever reason, the lot line adjustment isn't able to be performed, for whatever reason that might come up, the applicant can choose not to include this portion of the lot, this particular use that's on his lot, in his permit. He can discard portions of it if he wants to, or drop portions of it if he wants to?
Yes. In terms of the accessory structures, there's basically four different accessory structures and modifications that are allowed by the proposed resolution tonight. The applicant could choose to do any one of those in any order, and some he could choose not to do. So for whatever reason, if the workshop, we're talking about this, he didn't want to do the lot line adjustment, then it would just remain indefinitely as a workshop and couldn't be converted to the studio building. Or he could choose to rebuild the studio and maybe move it off the property line. That would be another option available.
Mm-hmm. My last question has to deal with a statement that comes up often and also within our findings, and I'll focus it on page 13. Due to the size and topography of the lot and the relatively modest size of the accessory structures, it appears that the five accessory structures would be appropriate for the site and consistent with the surrounding neighborhood. And then there's a statement, each structure will be architecturally consistent with the main house that will include beige stucco walls and mission tile roof. I note that one of the buildings isn't being proposed to have stucco walls and a mission tile roof. I think it has wood siding that's going to remain. But I'm wondering about that first sentence, due to the size and topography of the lot. Was there anything done by staff to an analysis of any type or a part of the project description that was provided by the applicant that
site of the two really proposed buildings, which would be the carport here, which is an existing parking space, and then this building here, which would be in the middle of a garden area, didn't seem like that would be significantly out of character with the site or the surrounding neighborhood.
I agree with that analysis that you have done. I'm wondering why we don't include that within our findings and have rationale within the findings. We've drawn this conclusion for these reasons. You had an excellent observation and presentation of what you looked at and what you saw and the considerations that you made. I think it would be helpful to encapsulate that type of language within the findings as we adopt them. Thank you.
Commissioner Sturdivant.
Just a clarification on when it comes to accessory structures. As I was looking in the definitions in our municipal code, and this detached accessory structure is a detached accessory structure, is a structure located on a residential lot occupied by a primary unit exclusive of second units. So that kind of confused me a little bit about the second units accessory. Could you kind of explain that a little bit for me?
Yeah, what that is intended to mean is that the second unit isn't counted as one of the accessory structures, because the code says you're going to have two accessory structures. So that's supposed to clarify that it's two accessory structures plus a second unit and a primary unit. So basically four structures is what's permitted by right under the zoning ordinance.
Okay, thank you. And when it comes to also a clarification on the studio, because I was also looking up, it says a studio is defined as something that's 450 square feet. If they're greater than 450 square feet, it shall be considered a second unit. So I was kind of confused how we're going with a 567 square foot studio when it's over the 450.
Well, that's part of why you're going to grant it a use permit and the purpose of the deed restriction to clarify that it can't have a kitchen, it can't be used as a second unit or a guest house or any of those sorts of things. So that's part of what we're asking the commission to grant tonight.
So the deed restriction is what helps that make that possible.
Correct.
And my last question is, in looking under the definitions of what can be done with accessory structures, can a bed and breakfast be run out of an accessory structure? As I was looking at the, when it talks about, where do I have that?
Anyway, I talked about there being home occupations being run out of accessory structures. Can that...
Residential structure. Right now, the workshop is not a residential structure, so he couldn't use that. But studio is yet another class of residential structure that's allowed, provided it meets the size criteria and the restrictions so it doesn't become a second unit. So you can have the first unit, the second unit, and then you can have the studio, which could be a dance studio, art studio, separate office, which means it can be heated and cooled and meets the residential criteria, although it's subject to use restrictions, so it doesn't morph into a residential dwelling.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Jack.
I have a couple of questions. Excuse me. Is the existing septic adequate to handle, say, a full load bed and breakfast?
There's currently two existing septic systems on this lot. One serves the second unit, one serves the main house. The applicant is proposing that the additional bathrooms will be connected to those existing systems. Before he can get permits to do that, he will have to provide an engineering septic analysis that shows that he has capacity and the leach fields can accommodate that. There's specific calculations that an engineer would do to ensure that the use that's proposed could be accommodated by the systems.
Thank you. The other question I have is relative to the sign size. And we've got a proposal for 200. There's really nothing outside of the 4x4 that governs us at this time? Or
yeah. The sign ordinance does not provide much direction in terms of how to do signage for a bed and breakfast in the residential zone. In the residential zone, you're allowed 4 square feet of sign by right. So that can be a real estate sign, whatever you want to put up. In this case, because there's a kind of a special use that does require some sort of directional information to the public, seems reasonable to provide some additional signage. The 20 square feet that's being requested seems reasonable based on the site and that sort of thing, and it's within the commission's discretion to grant that approval.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Chairperson Benz.
Yes, a question on building S6, which is the current workshop. That
Commissioner Colomarino.
Mr. Frase, you mentioned that there is a requirement that the owner of a bed and breakfast be on the premises whenever there are any guests staying at the bed and breakfast. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's one of your conditions of approval.
Is that a condition that applies to all bed and breakfasts, or is it just going to apply to this one? Or
I'm just checking to see which condition is so I can refer it to you, and then I'll answer your question. Okay,
it's condition 4.
Condition 4 on page 39 is that condition. In the last 10 years since I've been here, I think we've approved one bed and breakfast, which was probably 6 or 7 years ago, so we haven't had many of these. I haven't reviewed the conditions of approval, so I don't know if that condition was on a previous bed and breakfast CUP, but it would be staff's recommendation to add this condition to this project and any future CUPs to have that condition as well.
But there is no requirement of general law that says bed and breakfast the owners have to be on the premises whenever there are any transient guests there. Is that right?
There's nothing that's specifically in our zoning ordinance, though I think if in terms of just compatibility and ensuring that it stays a small-scale residential use and doesn't become sort of something that might become more intensive, more like a motel-type use, it seems like that's very appropriate.
Now, are there provisions of the municipal code that pertain, that set up rules governing bed and breakfasts specifically?
No. Really, all we have is the definition that I read earlier. That's the only direction we have in terms of what a bed and breakfast is.
And is a bed and breakfast materially different from a motel or a hotel?
Both provide the same service, which is overnight lodging for transients through the town, basically, or visitors, I think probably a better word. The difference is that hotels or motels are in the commercial zones. You're not allowed to have hotels or motels in the residential zones. In the residential zones are bed and breakfast.
Talk about phases of the project. And I just want to make sure I understand what that means. Are these phases going to are these phases in terms of the timing of the work, or are these just phases in terms of outlining the structure of the project?
I think it's intended to do both. We wanted it to be clear to the commission that the intent was not to establish all five units at the beginning, because some of the buildings require a substantial amount of work that may or may not actually be done. There's also some accessibility requirements. So the first phase is the easiest phase to accomplish, in that all he needs to do is provide an accessible parking space and a connection to the main house. And he intends to do that fairly soon, is my understanding. The second phase, which is to convert the second unit, will require some modifications to the structure and permits to do that. That may be a year or two out, is kind of what my understanding is. And then the third phase, which is conversion of the studio, seems like that's kind of a long-term project that may or may not actually happen.
I see. Okay, thank you. That's helpful. And then the next thing I want to ask you about is this use of the property for events, temporary events, you referred to them as. Now, we talked about the regulations relating to the bed and breakfast aspect. Are there regulations governing the temporary events?
Temporary events is described as a land use. So in the zoning ordinance for this residential zone, one of the allowable uses is temporary events. That then refers you to another code section that then defines temporary events. And it doesn't give you a lot of direction, especially in residential. It talks about, circuses and things like that in the commercial zone, but it clearly allows more than that. It does put some limits on intensity and frequency. That's been interpreted by staff that means that a temporary event is limited to 12 times per year. The code says 12 consecutive days. It doesn't really give you much direction beyond that, but our interpretation has been it's either 12 consecutive days or any 12 days during the year. So that's been staff's interpretation. Beyond that, though, we don't have a good definition of when a birthday party that everybody has in their house says.
And then the distinction between a small gathering or a party or a birthday celebration, like you mentioned, and a temporary event, that is not a bright line distinction, I guess.
No.
It's not above 10 people or something like that. You don't have any particular criterion that you use for that, do you?
We don't at this point.
Now, the next thing I just want to go over quickly is if this property is sold or transferred to another owner, let's assume that all the recommendations that the staff is making tonight are approved. If the property is sold to another owner, does that other owner get the benefit of all of the permits that would be granted?
Conditional use permits run with the land regardless of the owner. So whatever's approved tonight will run with the land, so a future owner would inherit those same rights or purchase those same rights. But the CUP is subject at all times to the approval of the Planning Commission. So if for whatever reason it was run by someone else that didn't run it as required, then it could come back to the Planning Commission for reconditioning, or in an extreme case, the commission could cancel a use permit for nonconformance. And we've actually had that happen with, you know, a butchering operation in town that one time was permitted, just didn't work any longer in that neighborhood. So although somebody else could end up, you know, operating this use, a different owner, it would still be subject to the control by the Planning Commission.
And the way it would come back would be through complaints brought to the attention of the staff, or the staff becoming aware of some activity that was creating a nuisance or other problems in the area?
Yes, there would have to be something that would bring it to the attention of the staff or the commission. Typically, that would be some sort of complaint from the neighborhood that couldn't be resolved.
So theoretically, if there were problems here, excessive noise coming from the events or too much traffic, their complaints could be made to the city, and this matter could be reconsidered in the future. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Vice Chairperson Benz.
I've seen a lot of bed and breakfasts in Marin. I've known a lot of owners, and I can tell you there's nothing in Marin that will rival this. This is just an absolute jewel. And I think the staff did a very good job of laying this out. I viewed the property. Mr. O'Malley has done a magnificent job maintaining the property, and I was very impressed. One comment, however, on this business of having Mr. O'Malley or Mrs. O'Malley on the property 24 hours a day while they're having this as a bed and breakfast, I know of no one in Marin where that's a requirement. They'll have a couple of guests. Guests are out all day shopping, going to restaurants, and I know for a fact that there's just no requirement of that. So I think this is a bit onerous, and I think it's just common sense that they're going to be there when they have to be, and I don't think it should be laid on them. So that's the end of my comments.
Vice Chairperson Benz.
Yes, two more questions. On the septic calculation, if one or both, the studio or the F1 building, are built, that would require separate calculations for each building if they're built independent of each other, right?
Most likely. If for whatever reason they came in on the same permit at the same time, you theoretically, I guess, could do them all at once, but I think they end up hooked up to separate systems, so it's going to make a lot more sense to do them as totally separate calculations, although it isn't something, you know, that is a city requirement. It's just likely the best way to do it.
Then my second question, it has to deal with Condition 4. It says the full-time occupant of the primary house on the property shall act as the innkeeper of the bed and breakfast. Wouldn't that allow Mr. O'Malley to appoint a temporary innkeeper so he and his wife could leave the property under management by a temporary innkeeper?
I think there's discretion there.
Yes.
You know, that the idea is that there was somebody that lives on the site that's responsible to make sure that the guests are being managed
Yes.
while they're present.
Thank you.
And I was wondering specifically with this property and the events that have been going on for a number of years, have there been any problems associated with that, whether traffic problems, accidents, you know, major complaints, anything that you're aware of?
Staff's not aware of any pattern of problems in that area with any of these events.
Okay. The accessory garage, also known as the carriage house, putting the HVAC into there, and I know one of the concerns with doing that is that it, you know, the potential of it becoming a second unit, but in this case, there is no, you know, oven or bathroom or things like that in there. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's basically permitted as a garage. I know there's been some improvements made in there. I think there's kind of like a wet bar that they use for, mm-hmm. I think, some serving purposes there. But it's not a kitchen, and there's not a bathroom in there.
So not something someone would want to live in.
Well, and it'll be clearly conditioned with that deed restriction
okay.
that wouldn't be allowed.
Yes. Okay. Let's see. The sign that is proposed, so that will be up more on the frontage than not back like the current one is?
Yeah, I think the current sign is somewhere kind of about here, and the proposal would be to move it up into the frontage in a spot
okay.
that wouldn't block any visibility for entering or exiting the driveway.
Okay. And with regards to the condition 6 for the bed and breakfast, the special events, for, you know, temporary or for the events as it is, that we've got that limit of 12 a year. So is what's being conditioned here that there could be any number of events specifically associated with the bed and breakfast that is not subject to that 12 a year?
These would be in addition to the by right 12 events a year.
Okay. So it could be small little parties or gatherings, or you could have big weddings going on?
Provided that it was serving the guests that were
Correct.
Occupying the bed and breakfast.
Correct. Okay. And that's all for right now. Any other questions of staff before we bring on the applicant? Oh, Commissioner Colomarino.
Yeah, I just want to ask one question following up on the one that was just asked and answered about the bed and breakfast events. So you said you could have these additional events that wouldn't be subject to
be that it would have to not create any impacts on the surrounding neighborhood in terms of parking, noise, hours of operation. So it would be up to the innkeeper to figure out how many guests for the wedding party could be accommodated and still be under that threshold of not creating a problem for the surrounding properties.
And other bed and breakfasts in town, do they have the right to have these events as well that you're describing?
Well, everyone has the right to do the temporary events. So
12 a year, right?
12 a year. So I don't know exactly how many other property owners are doing this sort of thing, but it is something that would be permitted under the current ordinance.
But you know, you have the right to do 12 a year, but then if you have a bed and breakfast, you can go, you can have as many, you can have more than 12, right?
That's
is that what you're saying?
That's what's before you tonight, is to make that decision about whether that's okay.
Chairperson?
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, and I'd like to carry on with that thought. You know, it's an interesting land use category, you know, and when I was reading Mr. Broadwater's comments, he was talking about tourist serving, commercial, words like that, and yet it doesn't, sometimes it feels that way, sometimes it doesn't. When there are events being handled, or when even when people are staying at the bed and breakfast, are there requirements for other licenses? Do being that they're serving food to the public, are there requirements for health department for the kitchen? If they have a reception for a wedding, is there requirements for licensing of alcohol or anything else that goes along with that?
Well, those would be both county and state regulations, and I don't know exactly whether they what the criteria for those permits would be at this point. So I don't have a specific answer to that, although the county and the state regulate those functions.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, I'd like to invite the applicant to come forward.
And I am not the public speaker of the family, so this makes me very nervous, to be perfectly honest. I'm going to be distracted by the pictures. There were folks that advised that it might be uncomfortable to some to have Tom here tonight, which is why I'm doing the speaking. Just from a personal perspective, I was born and raised here in Atascadero. I've taught school for the district for almost 20 years, have a real passion for the history of the community and the people who live here, and for this piece of property. We've really come to love it and to love what we are able to do with it and how we're able to serve the community with it. Let's see. As far as a couple, we have found that we really enjoy working together. Sometimes people think we're a little crazy, and I say this for us is a hobby. We really love hosting people. We love having people up to the house. We love sharing the history and what this house's history is to Atascadero. As a fourth grade teacher, I teach California history. So the way that this house magnets out to the different things within the community are just, for us, just a blessing and an enjoyment, and we enjoy sharing that with other people. Last year, we went to a bed and breakfast conference in, we were in Monterey. And on the way up, we said, this conference is either going to let us know that this dream, this idea that we've carried around with us for probably about 20 years is either really a bad idea or really a good idea. And we left with the overwhelming desire to pursue turning this piece of property into a bed and breakfast. The property is very well suited to it. I think both of us are very well suited to it. We really enjoyed talking with some of the different people and going to some of the different programs that were presented. And one of the things for me personally is I talked to two teachers. They were retired, but they started the business about 5 years before their retirement and were able to slowly work into it. And that's what we envision for ourselves, is slowly working into this, not doing it all at once. I am still a full-time teacher, which allows for summers and those kinds of things. First off, I forgot to thank the commission. Thank you very much just for hearing this, for your thoughtful questions and comments. And I had no idea you were all up on my property this last week. So hope you enjoyed it. We also were just really thrilled to get so many letters of support from the neighbors. We have 40 letters here, or 40 signed letters, as well as some individual specific letters. And I think you all have copies of those. So that was just wonderful to know that we have that kind of support. I do think we're a gem in our community. I don't think there is anything about this piece of property that has created problems. We have never received one complaint. I don't think we've ever had one person park on Portola. We're very careful about that. We've never had the police called. We've never had the fire department called. And we've never received a phone call from a neighbor letting us know that there was a problem. And then with these visits, Tom did most of these, the visits to neighbors, it was overwhelmingly supportive. People were actually quite excited and feel that we augment the community, we don't, and the neighborhood, we don't detract from it. I think that's it, unless there are some... Oh, I can address one of the questions. When we did attend the CABI conference, there is rules within. CABI is the California Association of Bed and Breakfast Inns. They have rules themselves that we would have to abide by to be part of their organization. And one of the many... I mean, it's things like liners in your trash cans and those kind of things. But one of the many things that I've already gone through is the food safety license. I did that last summer, so I am a certified food safety person at this point. So I have that license. And they have the requirement that you live on the premise as well. So there are, like Warren said, there are things within the bed and breakfast association itself that has requirements that we would need to meet. Do you have any other questions?
Let me see. Do we have any questions for the applicant? Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, and thank you for presenting to us. And your property is beautiful. I drove by it today. I was trying to find it. And that kind of brought me up, and I stopped across the street, and I looked at the sign that you have there. And I made a comment to myself about it, and it says, presently the sign sits back and is difficult to find as I drove by. I mean, I knew Tom lived up there somewhere, but not exactly where. And therefore, moving it forward, as you're proposing, is understandable. However, in doing so, it kind of begs the question to me as to the scale that it's talked about in the report, the 20 square feet, 10 foot high scale. And I'm saying to myself, if that sign was still back where it is now, then I can understand the size of it. But as you move it forward to the street, is there a necessity for it to be that large? Or I noticed that in the presentation that you did you make the graphic of the sign?
No, I did not make the graphic.
It has, you know, the little canopy, the shed roof over top of it. Is that why it has to be 10 foot tall?
I believe, and Warren, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that's the entire structure, not the sign itself. That's the size of what's holding the sign.
I understand that it's the structure, so we're talking about that the fall roof line on the top being 10 feet above the ground.
Yes.
Does that seem, again, being on the street, I mean, that's bigger than some of the signs that are along El Camino Real, the monument signs that are there, does that seem excessive? And again, being the scale, back in the distance, I could understand it. But on the street, I question it. Something to think about.
Okay.
Let me throw that out. You mentioned about the conference that you went to, and I'm glad to see that you did that. In the conference, obviously, there was presentations that were being made. Was there presentations on bed and breakfasts within residential zones? How do you deal with the neighbors? Did they identify potential problems, how they get resolved? Do you have a management plan that you've created in Renton to deal with specific issues that if something comes up, this is how we deal with it, or a neighbor calls, this is what we do? In case there is someone other than you on the property, they know how to respond, and they're operating under your guidelines that you've created for the benefit of our community.
That was multiple questions.
Yeah.
In fourth grade, we just are allowed to do one at a time.
I skipped fourth grade.
those type of things were covered. I'm trying to remember what your first question was.
Did they present ideas of problems that people in bed and breakfast have with neighbors?
Yeah, and definitely those things were discussed. To be honest, it usually is a very well-received business within a community. It usually is a business that creates a neighborhood. You know, it's an asset to the neighborhood. They are not the type of businesses that are going to create lots of noise or problem. Also, all bed and breakfasts are within, that's part of the nature, they're within residential areas. By definition, if it's a bed and breakfast, it's in a residential area.
Okay.
Yeah. And as far as food service, that is why it's a bed and breakfast. You're allowed to serve breakfast and some things like appetizers, but not lunch and dinner. That is not part of what a bed and breakfast does. In fact, one of the things I went to talked about, if you have people wanting lunches, you need to get a caterer to bring lunches in. You do not do that yourself.
As far as, again, as a management plan, I just asked the question. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, when you bring someone onto your property, obviously you're judging them as they've called you, and you're listening to what they want to be there for and what they're going to do. If for whatever reason there is someone who's misjudged and they become a problem, you don't have a problem then kicking them out, or?
There's, as far as a management plan, there, again, with this organization, this CABI organization, they offer all kinds of help in those areas, things you can set up. We haven't gone to that point because we aren't approved at this point to be a bed and breakfast.
But it's your intent to do that, then, if it takes that step.
And we will definitely work at, you know, doing all those things in the correct way.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Colomarino.
Mrs. O'Malley, I understand that you're growing some things on the premises, some fruits, I don't know, vegetables. Is that correct?
Yeah, that part for both Tom and I. Tom likes to do the growing. I like to do the cooking. Actually, I like to garden, too. I spend a lot of time out in our fruit orchards. But I myself have done a lot with preserving of foods. I grew up with the grandmother next door who taught me to can, and that's been a passion of mine for a long time. This hilltop, I mean, this is one of the original apricot orchards in Atascadero, and E.G. Lewis knew what he was doing with the places he planted fruit. You almost, any fruit tree that is planted there does well. So first it started with the apricot orchards, and I can make just about anything out of an apricot. Because we get so many, and I've done a lot of working with that, and we give a lot of apricot things as gifts. People are probably getting tired of me. We also have quince trees, pomegranate trees, fig trees. Our kiwi harvest this year was huge, and I just spent, you know, my evenings over a couple of weeks making kiwi jam for another event I'm working on. That is not at our site, but an event that I've helped to plan. So we would want to include a lot of those products that were grown right on our property in the cooking and what we do there on the site. And my family's probably about tired of my experimentation at this point.
So you're planning then to continue with the orchards and all that?
Absolutely. That's a huge part of what we're doing and a huge part of why we were interested in it to begin with.
So it will be integrated then into the bed and breakfast operation that you'll be serving some of the food that is grown right on the premises. Is that right?
I make an amazing apricot French toast. Yes.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for the applicant at this time? All right. Thank you, Ms. O'Malley.
Thank you very much.
I would now like to open up for any members of the public to speak. You're invited to provide testimony. And speakers, if you would state your name and address for the record, we would appreciate it. And you have 3 minutes to address us. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Steve Shively. I live at 5260 Cabrillo Avenue. And I am the pastor at Calvary Chapel, which is at 6955 Portola. And we also own the house next door at 6855 Portola. And we're probably about three or four houses down from the O'Malley's across the street. And I'm all in favor of the project. I know I've talked to Tom over the years, and he's mentioned this to me several times. And he showed me the plans the other day, and I was actually surprised how small it was because of how much he's talked about it. I've probably officiated a good handful of weddings up there over the years and have gone to other events. And I've just seen people thoroughly enjoy their property. It's very unique in the way it's set up. You really feel like there are no neighbors around you when you're there because of the way the trees are, the fences are, and so forth. And I just see people up there thoroughly enjoying it. I've never heard anybody do anything but rave about just the way the property is set up. I also know a good portion of the neighbors in the neighborhood, and I've never heard anybody complain or, you know, show disapproval with anything that's gone up over there. Also, I think that it's just a great opportunity for our city. I mean, these are the type of things we're looking for, to get people to come. There's a tax that comes with everyone who stays up there. And generally, when people come in from out of town, they're bringing money with them. And I think that's a positive thing for all of us, for our economy. Let's see what else. I think as far as noise, to run a successful bread and breakfast, it needs to be quiet. So I think it's their best interest to monitor all those things. And I look forward, you know, with you guys' approval to see what's going to be done, because I've been at the church now for about 14 years, and I have seen that property be developed. And you guys, if you hadn't been up there before, if this is the first time you've been up there, where that has come from has been amazing, what they have done with that, and the thought that's gone into the planning and the things that have been done, I think has been incredible. So, again, I'm all for it, and I hope you guys approve the plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shively.
Good evening, Commissioners. Joanne Main. I do have a statement here to read from Jay Deku. He's off to a dance lesson, and I'll put a plug in for the library fundraiser, even though he is a competitor of mine. So we are all dancing, right? So this is from Jay. I put my support behind the O'Malleys. If everybody had pride of ownership like they do, this would be the most beautiful city in the state. This will create tourist traffic, which relates to jobs and business for local revenues. I support their request for this bed and breakfast business, J2Q, and I'll submit this to you as well. And then speaking from the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, you know, we field so many questions in our office. People calling to request for bed and breakfast, where they can stay. That's a unique traveler that's looking for a quiet, out-of-the-way place to spend the night, a place to learn about the culture of the town. And this property fits the cultural heritage and agricultural tourism that is so hot right now in our state. I mean, we are a magnet for that kind of traveler. And this project would really allow us to say, yes, we have a great place for you to stay. I don't see bed and breakfast as competitions for the branded hotels, if you're ever thinking of that, because there's a unique situation for all. And I do believe that if we have more properties here, we will all be better served, and we can better serve the visitor. So I hope you adopt both of the resolutions for the bed and breakfast and the pertinent structures, and we can all support a great business in town and look forward to being able to provide those services. Thank you.
Joanne, could you wait, please?
Sure.
Is there a website, a statewide website, that says here's bed and breakfast? So there's kind of a little clique of people who seek out bed and breakfast. So wherever they go, they can sign
there
in.
There are books that are published. There are books that are published if you want to go to a bed and breakfast and bring your dog. I mean, there are very unique travelers, very specific. And some travelers, that's the only place they will stay is in a bed and breakfast, because they want to go and learn about the community, check out the culture, and see the arts of the area. That's the type of traveler they are.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. May.
Chairman Marino, Planning Commissioners, I am Lon Allen, and I reside at 6815 San Lucia Avenue. My comments tonight are also endorsed by my wife, Eileen. I've been familiar with Tom and Peggy O'Malley's site for many years, having been involved with them in colony home tours, the Historical Society's ice cream social on occasion, and then other general community at large organizations. I maintain there is no other better maintained piece of private residential property in this community. As ideal a setting as this site has been for weddings, receptions, and other fundraising events, many of those donated out of the generosity of the O'Malleys, the property is ideally suited for a B&B. Tom O'Malley has been an avid collector of Atascadero memorabilia for many years. As a historian for the Atascadero Historical Society, I appreciate anyone who collects, saves, and hoards any piece of memorabilia for this community. On occasion, I have contributed historic artifacts to his collection, knowing that it's going to be well taken care of. This home was built in, we think, about 1929 by the Peterson family. Mr. Peterson and his son owned the haberdashery in the Mercantile Building, commonly known as the La Plaza. And the ironwork within the home was done by the same man who was doing ironwork over on the coast on the Hearst Castle. Walking into just the living room and the parlor takes you back to another era. Peggy and Tom have preserved this feeling even after the 2003 earthquake damaged this historic home and could have given them reason to make some changes. And Peggy already alluded to the historic orchards that are included on this property. E.G. Lewis planted about 5,000 acres in pears and peaches, plums and apricots, and some of those trees are still growing on that site. I see nothing in this request that puts a strain on local roads, the environment, or the property. If you're going to have a B&B in your town, you want it to be as classy as what the O'Malleys have asked to do. A stay at the O'Malley Portola Inn is going to leave a very positive and long-lasting impression on anyone who stays there. Eileen and I agree with the staff conclusion that the B&B and the additional accessory structures would be consistent with the city's residential development standards and would be compatible and probably exceed the surrounding neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
As Jim Wilkins with the Atascadero Historical Society, I'm the president, and I'd like to be here and say a few words for Tom and Peggy. We like the idea of preserving our colony homes, and Tom's is a historic home. It's just outside of the colony home period for the date. And when we have our colony home tour in April, we see the enthusiasm with some of these homeowners, and we'd like to see more of that with the homeowners because we consider the homes part of our living museum. They're not ours, but they're the community's history, and it's time that we start utilizing our history to its best potential to help, you know, elevate the city to where we need to be, where Lewis would have liked us to be. I personally support this project up there. O'Malley's always do an excellent job, and they keep the place, you know, highly manicured, and I think it would help probably promote more of the homeowners that have the colony homes, not necessarily be B&Bs, but to enhance their homes and enhance our history. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkins.
Luther Johnson. I reside at 6750 Portola, and what I'm about to say, my wife would also endorse it also. In regards to Tom and Peggy, they have been wonderful neighbors. My wife and I have lived adjacent to the O'Malleys for 5 years, so we have experienced some of their events, and they have always been extremely respectful, and they just do the utmost to ensure that the community is not feel put upon in any way. And if nothing else, as far as a neighbor, I couldn't ask for a better neighbor. He wants to, he almost goes over and beyond trying to be even helpful and courteous in some of our own concerns with our own property and trying to help us out in some form or fashion. So I can only see this as an absolute positive for the Atascadero community. And just to kind of reiterate what others have said is that Tom and Peggy just do an A1 class job of whatever they do. So some of your concerns of events maybe invading on other people, I wouldn't say that would be a concern whatsoever because of just who they are as people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Good evening. My name is Marty Brown. My home and property is on Graves Creek Road, about a mile from the proposed project extension. So I will not be directly affected by your decision on the conditional use permit. I am concerned, however, that the precedent this would set could indeed have effect on my quality of life. A bed and breakfast establishment is not the same as an event center, a facility that can accommodate and entertain as many as 200 people at a time. Is an event center. The Portola Inn advertises that it now can accommodate from 10 to 200 people. It can hold up to 18 events per year without having to obtain a conditional use permit. I like and respect my neighbors. Some are retired people, some are young families raising children. We respect each other's privacy and peace. I would not want an event center next to me nor on our street because of noise, traffic, and night lighting. It would negatively affect my quality of life. That's why I've chosen to build my home in a single-family zone neighborhood. I'm sure the applicant can design and operate a first-class bed and breakfast establishment, but this is not the proper location for an event center as is planned. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Good evening, members of the commission. My name is David Broadwater. I'd like to direct your attention to the letter that I submitted you earlier electronically, and I'll give you a physical copy here tonight. And Warren, if you could find on the larger overhead aerial photo of the two that's in the staff report, you'll be able to see the home that I own next door immediately to the north of this property. Probably affected more by it than others. But this is about more than that. I want to just run through this six-page letter as quickly as I can. I hope you've had the chance to read it already. What I want to point out is that the descriptions of these buildings, the buildings on the property, are inaccurate. There are omissions about the current uses of the buildings, the grounds, and the signage. It can have some detrimental effects on the neighborhood and traffic. There are inconsistencies with the general plan pertaining to single-family residential neighborhood, and there needs to be more time for the public to be able and the officials to be able to adequately assess this. So I recommend that you choose options number 3 and 4 in the staff report, deny the conditional use permit due to failure to meet all 5 of the findings, and to continue the public hearing to acquire more information and more accurate information about the current property. Now, the garage, as it's described in this staff report, is not a garage. It fails to meet the definition of a garage under the municipal code. The second unit is actually what's called a guest house. It doesn't conform to the definition of the municipal code or the general plan of a guest house. So these descriptions of the buildings fail to provide your commission with enough accurate information upon which to base a decent decision. The current use of the buildings, up to 200 people, they charge up to $4,000 for these events. The garage is not a garage. It has a performance stain, floor-to-ceiling windows, dance floor. The existing unit, the guest house, accommodates 5 people a night for a charge. And the outside areas allow up to 200 people there. I'm skipping a number of these things because my time is running out. I know from having lived there in the summertime when I have my doors and windows open to cool the house off at night in the afternoon, when there's an event there, I have to shut those doors and windows in order to be able to hear music or myself think. The escalation of these events, which are not necessarily, that's not what a bed and breakfast is about. Bed and breakfast, fine. These special events, that's another whole story, and you're being asked to approve to escalate the number of those with apparently not any limits on those. And then also you'll find beginning on page 4 the conflicts with the general plan, and there's quite a bit of discussion about that. I just think that there's not enough information that's accurate in the staff report that's been provided to the commission or for the public. So I strongly urge you to continue this public hearing. A 2-week notice would have been nice, but that did not occur in terms of the homeowners or the public. So
Mr. Broadwater, your time is expired.
Okay.
Anyway. This is a little unusual, but we do have a commissioner that has a quick question of you, Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, thank you, David. And I want to thank you for presenting these things to us. I did receive it the other day. In the summary that you provided to us, you talk about the ambiguity within the project facilities. How is it that you know? Is it because of your proximity to the...
I talked about the what about the facility?
The ambiguity of the descriptions of the uses on the property. Is it because you live next door is how you know that?
No. All the information that I gave you about the prices, the numbers of people, the actual descriptions, the real descriptions, not garage, but the carriage house and all that, is right off the Portola Event Planning website. That's available. Anybody could know that. There's none of that information, however, in your staff report. None of it is about how it's currently being used, how it's a commercial business for these large events, charging up to $4,000 for 200 people at these events. There's nothing in there about
okay.
that.
As far as the negative neighborhood or traffic impacts, have you ever provided any traffic counts? Have you had anyone out there actually go establish what impacts there are that you're saying?
No,
I would think
that if there were going to be an analysis by the city and the planning department as to whether or not there are going to be traffic impacts, that it would be upon the city to do that kind of monitoring, not a private individual.
Have you ever complained?
No, I mean, this operation was put into effect in 2007 without a conditional use permit, no public hearing, no conditions of operation, no public notice at all. And so, you know, everybody just looked the other way and let this operation go on underneath the conditional use permit radar that we're working with now. What's the point?
In your letter, you talk about several general plan conflicts, and you emphasize several of them by underscoring maintaining the real character and identity, goods and services. Obviously these are your opinion, do you have any factual basis for how the events or the bed and breakfast don't maintain the real character and identity of Atascadero, or how they don't affect the goods and services of the community, or anything else that you've underlined within that document? Or is it somewhat speculative? I mean, these are obviously your opinion, but is there a basis for it?
I'm trying to understand your question. What is the reason that I don't think that it's consistent with the rural character of the neighborhood, say,
for
instance?
How in this case does the bed and breakfast not maintain the rural character?
Oh, the bed, like I said, the bed and breakfast, that's different. This is a bed and a breakfast, it's a boutique event center, as Tom O'Malley and Steve Martin have been pushing around town for years. That's what's been going on here.
Okay. What we
totally
want to do right now is stick with what is before us.
Yeah.
So let's.
Yeah.
I have one more question.
It's lit up like a Christmas tree at night. Lighting is. I'm not trying to answer his question, and the noise is very loud at times.
So that's how it doesn't maintain the character then.
That's direct observations of mine, not just my opinion.
And lastly, you comment about the public
Commissioner
comment
Schmidt,
period.
Commissioner Schmidt, we can ask these of staff as when it comes to the public comment period. Public. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Broadwater.
Good evening. My name is Patrick Shepherd. I live at 4400 Portola down the street from Tom and Peggy. On behalf of my wife, Teresa, we were requesting that you approve the plan for this project. I have attended a couple of events at Tom and Peggy's place, and it's very enjoyable. They've done such a great job with their property. I appreciate the opportunity to see the historic buildings there, and I think we need to open our historic treasures that are unique to Atascadero and show other people from the outside what we have, especially when it's well done like this. Their plans, I was reviewed with Tom, and he showed me the plans, and I thought after all the work I've seen them do already, that the plans are really thought out well, and it looks like a great project. And I'm excited, living down the street from something that's going to be such a great project like that. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd.
Good evening. My name is Tom Lutz. I live at 6630 Portola Road. If you look on the map, I'm the house right to the north. I grew up in the house that's directly to the south. It's 6680 Portola Road. I really love what the O'Malleys have done to the place. I can remember it in all kinds of conditions, and seeing it go back and stay with historical its looks and stuff. Actually, my parents bought their property from Mr. Peterson back in the early 60s. And then I grew up right there at that head house for like, well, they've had it for 42 years, my parents. My own daughter had her wedding up there a couple years ago. I guess it was last year, my parents had their 50th wedding anniversary. It was a beautiful time out there. I just loved the help and the care they gave us on the on the planning and everything of those events. And I just thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Lutz.
My name is Eric Pearson. I live right behind the O'Malleys. Our backyards meet each other. I'm probably as close to as them as they could be. I'm here in total support of this project. The O'Malleys have been the perfect neighbors as far as I'm concerned. I've lived behind them for close to 20 years now. The laughter that comes off of that property is wonderful. They don't have any problems with the people they invite. I feel totally confident that if I ever came to Tom or Peggy with a problem, it would be addressed very lovingly, and I just hope you guys let it go through, because everything they do is done well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson.
Good evening. My name is Russ Cracknell. I live at 6625 Portola Road, across the street from Tom and Peggy. We've been neighbors for 14 years. Again, I fully appreciate what they've done with their property, seen it transformed to what it is now. It's beautiful. It's wonderful to see them preserving the history and the colony home styles that we have here in Atascadero. I think it's a true asset to our community to have venues such as what they're proposing to our community. I don't have any problems with any bed and breakfast or temporary events. As to noise, lighting issues, it's never been a problem with what they've had here in the past. Again, Tom and Peggy have been great neighbors. If I had any problems, I know that they would fully address those. They would come to me, we would talk, everything would be fine. Once again, I just want to let you know, my wife Lisa and I fully support Tom and Peggy's efforts to bring a bed and breakfast and an event center, small scale, such as it's to be, to Atascadero. I think it's a great asset to our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cracknell.
Good evening, Madam Chair and Planning Commission. My name is Steve Martin. I do not now live in the city of Atascadero. I did grow up in the city of Atascadero. I have known Tom and Peggy since we were about that tall. That has nothing to do with the issue tonight. I hesitated to speak tonight because I have several perceived conflicts of interest. First of all, I am very close friends with Tom and Peggy O'Malley, and have been for many years. I'm proud to say that we've worked together on many projects, both on their property and on other properties, all for the benefit of the city of Atascadero and its people. And I've been accused of being a crony of Tom O'Malley. And I want to say for the record, if that is the nature of my relationship, I am proud to be a crony of Tom O'Malley. At least twice now, my name has been referred to as someone who advocates this project. First, it was brought up in a previous city council meeting by Mr. Broadwater. Mr. Broadwater was gracious enough to share his research with me into those quotations in the Atascadero News. I'm here tonight to tell you they are accurate. In 2008, I stood before the city council and said that boutique event centers were part of the niche market that would make a tourism future for the city of Atascadero. And as you look at this issue tonight, it's not so much about the O'Malley's or how that property would be managed, because you're not licensing a bed and breakfast. You are trying to decide what the appropriate use of this land is. And I think as you look into the future of Atascadero, if you too believe that there's a niche market for such event centers and such bed and breakfast, that you need to take that into account. The city of Atascadero is changing. The city of Atascadero is finding its way into new waters and tourism. And I think that that's something that needs to be taken into account when you consider the appropriate use for land in the city of Atascadero. So I will once again say that my comments regarding the potential of a niche market for boutique event centers in Atascadero is accurate. I stand by those comments. And I think those comments formulate part of the genesis and consensus for the goals and expectations of the city's current tourism marketing plan, which since the first of the year I've been entrusted with to enact in this city with the help of our community groups. So I would support such projects as this and ask that you would too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Hello, Karen Sturdivant, 4250 Tampico Road, and at the risk of stating the obvious, I'm married to Commissioner Sturdivant. What I'm hearing is, you know, whether or not something's going to work for a neighborhood, and at the risk of sounding discontent also, I live by the sewage treatment plant, the Wrangler Arena. I have horse trailers that go up and down my street, and I have an insomniac neighbor who works on loud machinery all night long. So can I move to Portola, please? You know, and nobody had to get a conditional use permit to make noise in my neighborhood. So unfortunately, we all have to close our windows sometimes, and we all have to deal with neighbors that sometimes do things we wish they weren't doing. But at the same time, we all love our neighbors. So I really do want to support the fact that B&Bs are amazing places. We had an opportunity to stay at one at Plymouth, and we really do want to be attracting more people that say, hey, let's open up a B&B, honey, because this is something we want to attract in Atascadero. Maybe we don't want one in each and every neighborhood. We want the special ones, like the ones the O'Malley's are opening. And anybody who hasn't had an opportunity to go and see the O'Malley property, there is not a weed on that place. We need to have Tom and Peggy show us how to make our properties look that good. So I do support the entire commission to please approve this as it stands, that this would be a good addition for Atascadero. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sturdivant.
I'm Ben Schregel, and I'm here to say that I think it's a good idea. Well, my address is 6702. I live on top of the hill right next door. So I do a lot of gardening and work for Tom O'Malley up there. I do believe that it would be a good situation for the city to go and approve this. And my wife and I do a lot of events up there helping them. And they are very, very nice people, and they understand how to get along with other people. I approve.
Thank you, Mr. Trigle.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Gordon West. I live on 6505 Flores Road. My property backs kind of catty-corner to Tom. He could probably throw a stone over there. I also own up to 6400 Portola and 6410 Portola Road, a couple properties next to Tom. My wife and I are supporting the O'Malley's. I've known them for a few years. We've had the opportunity to look at the property, and I recall, I don't know how many years ago when the property was up for sale, it was what we would call a fix-up place. And from what we've seen on the tour that Tom graciously took us, they have upgraded the property. I mean, it is, like Commissioner Ward would say, a jewel. So we support the O'Malleys and what they have done, and I think they have done a great job on the surrounding areas and what they're up to. I recommend a yes vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. West. Do we have any other members of the public wishing to speak? Seeing none, I will close public comment. And Director Frace, with regards to Mr. Broadwater's concern about the timing, the time allowed for the public comment period, could you speak to that? Is it the normal amount of time that's given for a project? Is there something unusual about this, what's before us tonight, and the amount of the timing given?
On the public noticing, all the public noticing was done per code. The requirement is that a legal notice be run in the local paper, which is the Atascadero News, 10 days prior. We did run it on February 19th. There was another article that the news ran on their own on the cover, I think on the 26th, but that wasn't the legal notice. So the legal notice was actually 12 days ahead of time. We also sent out the neighborhood notices to all registered property owners within 300 feet. So those go out 12 days ahead of time. It's kind of up to the post office whether they actually get it 10 days or 9 days ahead of time. In addition, we post a notice on the front of the property. That's not actually required by any of our codes. We do that in addition, and that's posted that Friday before, which is 12 days prior. So I've looked at all the records, and I believe that all the noticing was done in accordance with the code.
Okay. And other than Mr. Broadwater, have there been any other members of the public that have come and said, hey, we haven't had enough time to look at this, phone calls, anything of that nature?
No.
No. And with regards to the garage that he brings up, because it is odd, you go look at the carriage house and it doesn't look like a garage, but my understanding is that there are, you know, sort of limited titles and the definitions are a little bit flexible in there. Could you address that?
Yeah, under our code, accessory structures typically that aren't residential would be garages, workshops, and barns. So our best description, I'm trying to describe what it is under the zoning ordinance, is that's a garage. It does have a large door. You could park things in it if you wish. He has developed the name carriage house for it. Obviously, there's no definition of carriage house in the zoning ordinance. That's, I guess, just a term of art at this point. It's not a heated or air-conditioned building. I know that he does use it for temporary events, but under the zoning ordinance, we consider it a garage, where the request is that the commission allow it to be heated to accommodate some of the events. It will still remain as a garage or workshop under the zoning ordinance with a deed restriction that would allow it to be heated space.
And is there anything with regards to the events or the accessory structure itself that requires a CUP that wasn't gotten? Is there something out of compliance?
No. All the accessory structures, although there's more accessory structures than are normally allowed under the current code, that code section was established, I think, in 2002. All those structures were permitted ahead of time. So everything on the site structure-wise is legally established structures. In terms of the operation of events, as I've mentioned before, there is broad definition of temporary events existing under the zoning ordinance, and it's my understanding that the events going on out there happen under the definition of temporary event.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to bring it back to the commission for any other questions of staff or discussion. Vice Chairperson Benz.
Yes. I would like to ask a couple questions of Peggy O'Malley. Yes.
Is it on?
How long have you lived at the property on Portola?
I think it's 15 years. I have to do things like go back to children's high school graduation dates. So
okay.
We moved in 95.
I believe you. Could you tell us how many events that you've had in the last 12 months that you can recall?
I would have to go count on the calendar. I don't think it's over 12.
And what was the largest event in the number of people that attended?
The largest events that we've had on the property are our own children's wedding receptions, and they've been at about 200. Non-family members, maybe 150, 175. Again, I'd have to go look.
What's the smallest event that you held there?
Does my granddaughter being over today count? I do baby showers for our church. I have a monthly prayer meeting for mothers of military, our sons in the military. That's usually three or four people. I don't count those in those temporary events. Those are just things I do.
Okay, that's all the questions I have there. I would like to ask a question of Mr. Broadwater. Mr. Broadwater, how long have you lived in your property?
Since 1972.
1970?
No, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. That's when I moved into town. Since 1973. I bought it in 1977.
So you've been living there since 1977?
As an owner. I moved into the house in the front. I'm a landlord. The house in the front, is I rent out as a rental. I started living there in 73. 4 years later, I bought the property.
Thank you.
Larger scale, correct?
Yeah, temporary event is going to be something fairly large and unusual in a residential area. So a wedding clearly would qualify as a temporary event. The things that you normally have at your house that anyone would host, like a birthday party or a book club or something like that, those aren't even events. That's just life. So we wouldn't consider any of that. So the temporary events are going to be the large, unusual events. So there's a lot of things that happen there that we wouldn't even classify as events.
And just to go back to you had said earlier that there have been no complaints. There's been no anything that you're aware of that has been any kind of complaint against this property with the events that they have held over this last year or years.
No, there haven't been.
Thank you.
Commissioner Colomarino.
On this definition of what a temporary event is, I gather if somebody has a wedding or a graduation party for one of their children on their premises, that would be considered a temporary event or wouldn't? If, let's say, they have 150 people.
Family events would not be temporary events. To the degree it expands where it's, And that's something, you know, the city's never going to be able to really tell what a family event versus another event is. But clearly a family gathering is not an event.
Does it matter whether it's a commercial transaction behind the event? In other words, where the property is being rented or leased for the event? Whether there's a charge being made for the use of the premises is what I'm getting at.
Well, I think clearly when it's a commercial operation with, you know, a separate party holding a wedding, that's an event. But that, I wouldn't go so far to say anything that has any commercial component is an event. If you're having like a Tupperware party, is that an event? Well, no, I don't think that's probably an event. So the commercial part isn't probably always the distinguishing factor, but it may be part of it.
And several months ago, we had a Planning Commission meeting where we took up the subject of the boutique events and formulating some rules and guidelines for the operation of these event centers. Could you tell me where that matter stands at this point?
What I heard you say before, we're really talking about two types of events. There's the 12 that are allowed under the normal procedure that everyone can have throughout the community. And then there is another group of events that are being associated with the bed and breakfast. And so if someone is staying at the bed and breakfast for because they're planning on having a wedding, and they're the wedding couple is there, the relatives are in some other buildings, then that is an event that's outside of the 12 that's allowed annually.
That is what's being proposed.
Is there, and there isn't a number that we can place, I mean, that is placed on, like we have right now 12 for, everyone can have 12 events on their property. There isn't a similar number for what's being proposed right now.
Staff's not recommending a number at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Jack.
Director Frace, a CUP stays with the property, correct? Should it be sold?
Correct.
Okay. Could we look at the temporary event 9-6.1773B? This says no period no longer than 12 consecutive days. It doesn't specify, or four successive weekends. Where, I missed something here?
No, as I mentioned earlier, it's not very clear. Staff's had to make an interpretation of how to apply that when it's not in consecutive days. So the interpretation has been 12 days is the key number. So it's either 12 consecutive days or 12 unconsecutive days has been the staff interpretation, just because we don't have anything else to go with.
And do we need to add that as a condition to ensure that should the O'Malley's sell, or, you know, the O'Malley's have done a tremendous job with that property?
Well, we're not, but temporary events really aren't before you right now.
Okay.
So I wouldn't really recommend going there, because I think then we're going to start mixing number of other things.
Commissioner Colmarino's comments about the boutique ordinance and being on hold. Is it anticipated when that picks up that we will be then defining special events as opposed to temporary events?
Well, right now we're not working on the boutique events, and based on the staffing, I don't really anticipate that we are going to be working on it in the near future. If we were to work on it, those are the kind of questions that we would start to investigate. But since we're not working on it, I don't want to try to anticipate how we might, you know, start to attack it.
And you didn't do any research of other cities in our community, whether there was any definitions attached to those separate terms?
No, I didn't look. Typically, these things are very unique to an individual community. I know the county's pulling their hair out trying to deal with this issue.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for your time.
Any other questions or a motion? Commissioner Colomarino.
I have some comments prior to the motion.
Sure.
And I would just say that the bed and breakfast component of this seems like really there's not much of an issue in my mind. As a bed and breakfast, this looks like really it'll be a model facility, not only because of the particular management that will be given to it, but also because of the agricultural component that there is. As was pointed out by Joanne Main, there is an agricultural tourism niche that's developing, and I think this particular property would go very well with that. The scale of it is not going to be grand. It shouldn't put any particular pressure on the traffic, the streets, or produce any particular impacts that should be troublesome. A bed and breakfast in the community like this should be a draw for tourists and enhance the city's ability to attract tourism. So all of those things just look very compelling. Also, because of the way the property, you all remember, we took up a few months ago, and it does seem like something that there should be some citywide guidelines for. The thing is, here we've heard a lot of evidence showing that with this property, there are really no abuses or problems. Mr. Broadwater has reported some inconvenience that he's experiencing. On the other hand, we've heard from so many other people in the neighborhood who speak glowingly of the operations there. So from an evidentiary standpoint, it just doesn't seem like the event component of the land use here should disqualify it for use as a bed and breakfast as well. I must say, though, after looking at this application, it seems to me that it would be very welcome if we could go ahead at some time in the foreseeable future with the boutique events planning that was started a few months ago. And, of course, there are financial constraints and staffing constraints that are undeniable. But this case does provide a reminder that it is a matter that warrants some attention. But based on what I've heard tonight, I'm inclined to favor the application to go ahead with this as a bed and breakfast on the terms that the staff has recommended.
Vice Chairperson Bence.
Yes. I've lived in Atascadero going on 13 years now, and I travel Portola Road every day of the week. I've been doing it for 13 years. I've never seen a traffic problem on Portola Road that was caused by the O'Malley's events. We also have an excellent example of a property owner, the Calvary Church, who holds an event every Sunday of probably 100 or more people without any problems. It shows that the capacity of the road is there to handle the kind of...
And I've traveled all over this country and Europe and other places. I find this, the applicant's property to be outstanding for that type of event and the location, and it's certainly an asset to the city of Atascadero. It's a beautiful historical site. It's been maintained that way. Traffic, I've been to some of Mr. O'Malley's and Mrs. O'Malley's events. I have never had a traffic issue, and I've been there with some pretty good events. They've really set a high bar for others, to be quite honest with you. And in addition to everything else, it brings revenue to our city. So based upon what I've heard tonight, and that I would support this.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, and I concur with the statements that have been made about the bed and breakfast. I do have a couple comments, though, and I want to focus in on the sign out front. And this is almost 10 feet right here, this soffit. And so that's the height that we're talking about for a sign that's going to be probably 10, 15 feet off the edge of the roadway. And I think it's excessive. Again, if the sign remained where it is today, I could understand the need for the size of the sign. Again, I went by a couple times, and I didn't see it, and it would have flagged it to me. So I do have concerns about the size, and would like for us to consider possibly reducing that or providing direction to staff as to an alternate to it. I'm also asking out loud, and I don't know if it's feasible to do, but could we, as a planning commission, establish a planning commission policy as to what special events or with respect to bed and breakfasts, how many special events there could there be? And that would be our policy, that in case other projects came forward, then we would have something established that we could refer to, in that the ordinance itself isn't making its way forward at this time. But again, we can kind of put the public on notice that this is what we kind of look at. We have a conditional use permit process that gives us the flexibility to make some decisions as to what we would like to see. And so I'm throwing that out. And lastly, with respect to the septic systems that are going to be on the property, we'll see what happens. So anyway, sign and establishing a policy. Is other commissioners interested in doing such a thing?
Let me ask Director Frace, in terms of establishing any sort of a planning commission policy, is that something that we're even, you know, in our purview to do on a blanket basis?
Well, what's before you tonight is a bed and breakfast with a provision for special events, and you're free to condition that as you see fit. As you condition that, staff will look at that probably as, you know, potentially a precedent on future ones. So although it wouldn't be a policy like a council policy, you will have set a precedent.
Thank you. And with regards to Commissioner Schmidt's concern about the sign, what would be, in terms of what you've been working with and sort of the look of it, why was that height, why was that chosen, and is there a specific reason for that?
The sign was designed by Mark Greenaway, who's a local artist. He's done the Veterans Memorial. And the idea is that the very top of the decorative tile roof would be at most 10 feet. It doesn't actually end up being there, but you know, just for round numbers, it was shown as 10 feet. So I think, you know, from there to the top of the sign is probably about 3 feet of open space and decorative tile roofing. So that puts the top of the sign at about 7 feet, which I think is what they were thinking was good for vehicular visibility and keeping up above the shrubbery and that sort of stuff so that they can landscape around it. So, you know, when you try to picture it in a room like this, 10 feet sounds huge. Out in the real world, 10 feet blends in pretty quick. So I don't think it's an excessive request. If, you know, the commission felt like it needed to be reduced somewhat, I'm sure workable as well. But do keep in mind that as you push it down, then your ability to landscape below it, some, you know, kind of gets squeezed.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Sturdivant.
Yeah, Warren, just when it comes to the boutique events that Commissioner Colmarino had been asking about that we're not working on at this point, but if at some point it does happen to come to pass that we do work on that and we do get a clarification for special events, would those bed and breakfasts or whatever falls under that, would they be subject to whatever definitions would come out of that?
Well, likely where we actually end up is the definition of temporary event, that 12 units or 12.
Commissioner Ward.
Well, I enthusiastically support the bed and breakfast and the event center. With regard to the sign, all I had to hear was that Mark Greenaway designed it. And I'm not in a position, and I'm not sure if any of my fellow commissioners are in a position to micromanage what Mark has created. It's in the best interest of the O'Malleys to have a sign that's in good taste, in proportion with the surrounding landscape. So I think it speaks for itself, and I don't think we should get involved in that kind of thing. It's self-evident that it's going to be a good sign, and it's going to work, and it was designed by a first-class artist. So I think everybody's chimed in on everything. I think it's time to vote on this.
Thank you. Well, and I'll just say that I too think that this is the house as it stands and everything that you've both done to it is a tremendous asset to our city. And I've been to several events there and had my own birthday party there, and I can say firsthand how very particular they both are about following the rules and, you know, hey, can we have a, you know, another glass of wine and a song? Nope, noise ordinance, you're out of here. So they're very... they say it in a very kind way, though. But they're very particular, very much obeying the rules and very considerate of the surrounding neighborhood. And so, and I appreciate that about them. So I am ready to entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Planning Commission adopts draft resolution PC 2010-0003 to allow an additional 256 plus or minus square foot accessory structure with a bathroom, an additional 567 plus or minus square foot studio with a shower facility, an additional 572 plus or minus square foot carport, and the installation of a high vac heating and air conditioning unit in an existing non-residential U occupancy accessory structure subject to deed restrictions, findings, and conditions of approval, and the Planning Commission adopt draft resolution PC 2010-0004 to allow a five-room bed and breakfast use subject
special events until our ordinances get written. Someone else comes in, and for whatever reason, we don't like their property as much as we like O'Malley's, or for whatever reasons, and we aren't being able to distinguish between those things, and we put a restriction, and they say, well, you didn't do it for that guy. He's on the city council. Why not? I'm concerned about that, and I think that we should put at least a minimum restriction of the 12 that is allowed by the temporary event ordinance. And with respect to the sign, amongst my many talents, I also have a degree in fine art and graphic design. And I have painted signs that have been on the highways, on buildings throughout the state and other areas. I do know what signs should look like and what they should be. I do believe that the scale of the sign at its location is potentially could be oversized in that Mr. Greenway is a fine artist and do some things. I do think that hopefully he'll listen to the comments that are being made. And if that sign can be scaled down to be something more within the character, we have across the street a church, the Calvary Church. Look at the sign that they have out in front of their church. It's 4 feet high, not 10. And it accomplishes the goal, too. And so hopefully if there isn't any other commissioners that are interested in trying to deal with the sign, then hopefully the people will listen to it and make some changes on their own.
And is that something, Annette, that you can have put into the record, please, about that? And I would say with regards to conditioning the special events, we keep sort of interchanging special events and temporary events, and they are not the same thing. So when they do at some point in the future, meaning the city council, go to address a boutique ordinance, it would be for the temporary events. Is that correct? Like the special events is just a unique situation in this case, and it may come up again, it may not.
Yeah, temporary events are what's allowed under the zoning ordinance. Special events is a term that staff's given to these events associated with the bed and breakfast, which is within your discretion to condition.
Okay. And I do appreciate your concern about, you know, as both our fellow commissioners here stated in the beginning that, you know, having been a former mayor and on the council, that could sway. And I think where I'm coming from, it has nothing to do with the status in the community. It's knowing them as people and how their character and the way that always make that accusation.
Okay. Well, I'm interested in asking the motion makers if there is if they would like to modify their motion to include a restriction on the number of events that are associated with the bed and breakfast. And let's start at the number 12.
Vice Chairperson Bentz had a...
Yes. I think we're trying to put a condition that doesn't exist on a bed and breakfast. And when we do decide how we're going to treat special events, that's when we can apply the conditions to any future bed and breakfast and whether or not we grandfather existing bed and breakfasts in this community to continue to operate without meeting those requirements. So I don't think it's proper for us to try to interject or create a quasi-law because we aren't a law-making body. That's up to the city council to adopt those kinds of laws. It's not up to us. So I would not agree to that as a maker of the motion.
Commissioner Colomarino.
I think the issue that Commissioner Schmidt is raising about the special events is a troublesome one. What seems to be happening is we started out with a property that has these temporary events on it and is subject to some limitation in the number of them. You're using the number 12 per year. And when it becomes a bed and breakfast, however, it escapes that limitation. That's what I think I've heard, and I want to make sure I've heard that correctly. Is that correct, Warren?
What we're saying is that in addition to temporary events, the innkeeper can conduct special events for the guests that are there, which could include, say, a wedding type event if the wedding party was staying there. There isn't a specific numeric limit on that. So yeah, it is in addition to 12. Staff wasn't comfortable trying to figure out a number. It seems like, to a certain degree, just based on its guests that are there, that it's somewhat self-limiting, but there is not a specific number that staff's proposing. Commission has to...
I'm contemplating something, for example, where you have a temporary events defined as above a certain number, and you have the bed and breakfast being allowed to have a certain number of those events without question, and then also a certain number that's below, let's say, 100 people without... they could do those without limitation. Maybe we could have two categories of events. That's one way that occurs to me to deal with this issue. I'm not sure we could deal with it tonight, but it does seem as though by this property becoming a bed and breakfast, it escapes the limitation on temporary events that now applies to it.
It actually has the same limitation of 12 temporary events a year. It's that the special events are something different. The special events are specifically for the guests. The temporary events would be for people not staying on the property. So anyone in the public wanting to come rent it, that is a temporary event. Special event is people, you know, renting out the bed and breakfast and then doing an event.
Well, as I understood it, though, if you have one person staying on the premises and then there's a wedding of 150 people and that person is a part of the wedding, now you have an event that's the size of a temporary event and in all other respects is like a temporary event, but it's not subject to the 12 temporary event limitation because it's part of the bed and breakfast operation.
That is correct, but they are two separate types of events. Yeah.
Yes, and the question I think that's coming up is whether this is too open-ended to allow the bed and breakfast to
that.
Be able to do
mm-hmm.
that.
I understand that. I've got several commissioners that want to ask questions. Let me go in order. Commissioner Jack?
The question I've got is there any way, and I know this is... But is there any way to condition this that at such time as a policy is developed to cover bed and breakfast, that it would be come back retroactive to this particular project?
It really works well and okay. would accomplish your intent. I don't know about that because I'm not exactly sure how we would do it.
Just to comment on that, personally, my concern would be is that if the O'Malley's are going along and running this and there are no problems, that, you know, everyone's fine with the neighborhood, there's no accidents, there's no issues, and then suddenly an ordinance comes along and that would be, you know, put onto them that maybe then significantly changes their operation, you know, detrimentally. So I'm a little iffy on that.
My concern is not Tom and Peggy O'Malley. My concern is the longevity of a CUP, and you don't know the circumstances of the future which might dictate something totally different that we wouldn't approve to begin with. But there it is, already approved.
But so then the CUP can come back before us, or whoever the commission is at that time, if there are any issues.
Why would it?
And it can be, if there are problems, if there are complaints, and there is cause to bring it back before this commission because it's not working the way it's supposed to, it can be changed. There can be new, restrictions or things added to it, or it could be completely revoked.
Is that correct, Warren?
Yeah, the CUP is always under the supervision of the Planning Commission. So okay. If there's complaints, problems, concerns about this, it can be brought back to the Planning Commission for, you can change conditions, you can even revoke a CUP if you're convinced that it just can't operate okay. consistent with the neighborhood.
Thank you. I'm okay. satisfied.
Vice Chairperson Betts.
Yes. We heard testimony here tonight that they've had 150, 175, 200 people at family weddings, and there haven't been any complaints regarding those sizes. We have a church right down the street that I know has at least 100 members attending that church that has not created a problem. The history is that we don't have this problem that we're worried about. When we do have this problem, then we can address that problem. But we don't have the existing statutes in place adopted by the city council to allow us to do this. I'm not in favor of it. I'm in favor of adopting statutes.
Are you keeping with
I
your
would
second?
Just, yes, I was just calling for the question. And
okay. Roll call, please, Annette.
Vice Chairperson Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Jack?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, I will obviously vote for the project. It's a wonderful piece of property and a wonderful use for the property. I've obviously expressed my concerns about the lack of control over the special uses, but I do think that the comments that were brought out to Director Frace about the CUP and that can come back to us if there are complaints, and that is the control that we can provide at that point, and I'm satisfied with that. So my vote is yes.
Thank you. Commissioner Colomarino.
Yes, I think we may have a very good enforcement mechanism right next door, and Mr. Broadwater, if there are any potential questions that ever come up about revisiting the conditional use permit. So I say yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you, Annette. All right. Do we have any commissioner comments and reports this evening?
I have a, before everybody leaves, I have a commissioner report here, and this would warm the heart of my fellow commissioners. This is about a sign. It's about the Purple Heart signage that's going to be up on Highway 101. I gave a report 2 weeks ago. I'd like to give a progress report. Our group has completed successfully negotiations with Caltrans. We've established a domain name and a website. It'll be up in a couple of days. I invite you to visit it on your computer. It will be purpleheartca101.org. And donations are coming in, and we expect to start putting these signs up in about 4 to 6 weeks. And it's going to be an asset to this community because I think it's going to direct a lot of people to the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial as well as other museums and venues of veteran interest along this 101 corridor. If anybody's interested in getting some information, I
move along at this point. They've resubmitted a revised site plan and elevation. We are scheduling that for a study session with the Commission and Council for next Thursday. So that is March 16th. It'll be here in the Council Chambers at 6 p.m. It's going to be an informal study session opportunity for the applicant to explain the project and for the commission and council to ask questions. There'll be a period for public comment as well. We want to make sure that everybody's kind of got an idea of what the project is and what the issues are as we go into the staff analysis and start putting together the staff reports and doing the environmental review on it. We are looking to bring it to the Planning Commission toward the end of April. There's probably a component of a road abandonment that's going to be included in the project, which will kick it up to the City Council for the final decision. So it's looking like it's going to be a CUP with a road abandonment. So the Planning Commission will be making a recommendation to the council in the end, but the study session will be next week. So hopefully all the commissioners can get that on their calendars.
Next Thursday at 6. It's right there in
March 16th.
On the yellow sheet.
That would be March 11th.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I'm looking at the wrong thing. My computer ran out of batteries. Okay. Yes, March 11th. So your next meeting is March 16th. That's why I wrote that down.
And do we have anything on the agenda for that?
For the 16th? I don't think we have anything at this point. So if something doesn't show up in the next couple days, then we may be canceling that meeting.
Okay.
And that'll conclude my report.
Thank you, Director. And with that, meeting adjourned.